Hey, it's Marilyn from Gallery Chit Chat. I'm here today with Don Meyer, whose latest exhibition, Marking Time, has just been opened by Meredith Parker, President of Arts North, the Elizabeth Arts Society. The exhibition runs from the 19th of February until Sunday, the 26th of March. Hello, Don.
Hello, Marilyn.
It's good to have you here. It must have been a proud moment for you on Sunday when all those beautiful paintings of yours were exhibited.
It was. I don't think anyone likes to acknowledge just how humbling it is to put your work out on public display and have people come along and say nice things. But it does make you proud. It's also nice. It's something you can't do at home, generally speaking. You can't see your works at one time in one place.
That's true.
And so exhibiting them is that opportunity.
Well, it's a very strong exhibition. It occupies the two top rooms of the Gawler Gallery. One is mostly life drawings, not entirely.
Well, but it's mostly charcoal.
And charcoal, yes. And the other one is pastels and has different themes. You said in your speech on opening day that you believed everybody could draw.
Very definitely.
Now, did you believe that yourself, like, pre-50?
No, I thought that I couldn't draw.
Yeah.
And nor did I go to any effort to counter that view, because I had no interest in drawing, because drawing was something I couldn't do. So
at school you couldn't draw? You weren't one of the better drawers in the class?
I could draw a fighter plane with swept back wings.
Yes,
I couldn't draw anything that looked like it wasn't drawn by a child, even as I matured. I could probably make an effort at copying something from a photograph if I spent enough time, but I couldn't draw natively. I didn't have any idea of how to represent something on paper from out there in the real world.
What made you decide to all change that?
At one stage, I was in the pottery business for years, and in the way of globalisation, pottery became cheaper from places further afield.
Yeah.
And at that point, I thought I was going to need another source of occupation.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of, I hope this is not boring, but I thought of looking at producing sculptured wall panelling, okay, made out of lightweight concrete, lightweight cement.
I never knew there was such a thing.
Yeah, there wasn't. to be used as dividers or privacy shields in today's smaller living domestic areas, where the Hills Hoist is out there, etc. If you can put up something that has both an aesthetic and a privacy aspect to it and do it affordably, then I thought that might have appeal. So I found a way of producing panels that could be carved and then moulded and produced in some limited numbers so that it had an aesthetic. So I went to Para West Adult Campus to do a bit of sculpture training. And anyway, in my first year there, I came to realise that it behoves someone who would sculpt to be able to draw. And so I enrolled simultaneously for a course in drawing, and I subsequently never pursued the sculpture thing past an interest.
Yes.
But I did become it's hard to know where recreation starts and where addiction perhaps comes in, but drawing got a hold of me, and I had to keep at it until I, quote, got better or whatever.
Yes.
And
well, I think you definitely got better.
it's kind of you, and I hope so. I have, you know, put a fair amount of time into it. I attend one form or another of a drawing session on a weekly basis at least, mm-hmm. and have done now for those 10 years. But that's how I got into it. And in terms of whether or not anyone can draw, anyone can draw. There's absolutely no doubt. I often say to people that it's really just about making one mark, looking at that one mark and asking yourself where the next mark has to go in relation to it.
Yeah.
If you can get that next one right, put it in the right spot, then all you've got to do is move on to the next mark and do the same thing again. So in actual fact, you're only doing the same thing repetitively. You're making a mark relative to another mark. And when you think about when you went for your first driving lesson, especially if you were nearly as old as me or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
You had a manual motor car. You,
yep.
yep. You had a terrified parent sitting in the next seat. But what you had to do is, at some point or another, you had to turn around a left-hand corner, slowing down, putting your foot on the brake, depressing the clutch, changing down a gear, okay?
Yep.
Putting an indicator on or sticking your hand out the window, as the case may be.
I don't think I was that old that I had to put my hand out the window.
Watching out for the woman that's stepping off the footpath with the pram, the kid on the other side of the road with the football, and most of all, the motor car that's going to turn right across your face as you turn left. The windscreen wipers may or may not have to be engaged, turned up, turned down, foot off the clutch, change gears again. That's exactly right. Now, you think of that as opposed to making one mark, looking at it, and making one more mark in relationship to mm-hmm. the existing mark. Anyone can learn to draw.
I urge you all to come to the Gawler Gallery and have a look at how Don's put one mark on the canvas, followed by another mark. He does really, really brilliant work, I assure you. Now, there's a couple that I want to talk about. I know your life drawings are probably your favourite thing. Would that be true?
Well, that's
they're what you're best at.
The lady that was largely responsible for teaching me to draw was Julia Mannix.
Oh, yes, yeah, she's well respected in this town, mm-hmm. well loved.
And she would say that if you can draw the figure from life, you can draw anything.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's true or not, I'm not sure, but it goes a long way towards the truth.
To me, it seems to be the hardest thing.
We know the human figure intimately.
Mm.
You can draw a tree, and if you leave a branch off or add a branch on, no one knows, no one cares.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put a sixth finger on a hand, trust me, everybody sees it.
So there is
that about life drawing. I don't know that it is my favourite, but it's a compelling thing that demands that you, I can't even say get better at it, but it demands that you give it your attention.
Mm-hmm.
All
right, now the first painting, well, it's not a painting, it's pastel, that I want to ask you about is called Time and Tide. And you have drawn a man's head, no neck, just his head, and it's sitting in the middle of a seascape. What made you decide to do that?
Well, I did a couple of drawings with seascapes as a background, and this particular one, I had the, as you say, man's head. If you have a look at the man's head, have a look at his eyes and have a look at where he's looking. And he isn't looking anywhere within that drawing. He's looking outside of the drawing. He's not looking at the sea. He's not looking at anything in the drawing at all. He's a man of mature years. Mm-hmm. He's at least 70. He probably is looking into his own head. He's looking into his future. And I think he understands what that entails to some extent. He's probably also looking into his past. He's looking into his life. And if you look in that drawing, down in the bottom left-hand corner, mm-hmm.
Yes.
There is...
I saw that.
...a outline in luminous pink of a boy kicking a football. And just as the man is not meant to be coming out of the sea, he's just in a scene where the sea is there, the boy is not meant to be there either. He's in the man's imagination. And why the sea? Because I think all of us find the sea a place for reflection.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
As I said, this was one of a couple of drawings that I did of this nature. I won't bore you with the other one, but so that's meant to be. It's meant to be a bit deeper than perhaps some of the others. I don't do deep and meaningful easily, and I don't do it commonly. And in fact, if I had to do it, I probably would struggle to come up with the next deep and meaningful.
Mm. I mean, as soon as you walk into the room, it just drew my attention straight away. It was the painting I walked over to first. Mm. Now, in the other room, you've got vines in between times. This is a pastel charcoal drawing. And the reason I love it is because it's Barossa Valley wine vineyard, but not as we normally see it. We normally, if we see a picture of a vineyard, it's always when it's full of leaves and full of fruit. And I think I mentioned to somebody on Sunday, I lived in the Barossa for a little while, so I was quite aware of what the vineyards looked like. And there was a story about something that happened in the Barossa, and one of the TV channels showed these beautiful lush green vines, like they just travelled up through the Barossa today and filmed them, except that it was the middle of winter and they looked nothing like that. It was pretty obvious they just grabbed a bit of old footage out of the Barossa. But this is a beautiful picture because you've got the black starkness of just the branches and a white sky, sort of grey white sky. It is... I can't find... You might be able to tell me what the word is. I can't find the word.
It's impactive.
It's impactive, yes. It's impacting.
Well, talking of that particular drawing, one of the things about charcoal, of course, is that it's black.
Yeah.
And when you put it on something which is a white background, in this instance it's on paper... but the paper is white, it gives you a very, very strong contrast.
Yes.
And while the Barossa is renowned for its lush green vineyards in their a cool suggestion of green during summer and the huge amount of irrigation that goes into producing that green, I might add, the fact of the matter is that they're only like that for less than half the year.
Yep.
They're lovely also in autumn.
Mm.
But if you're growing in charcoal, it's when those vines are bereft of leaf that you've got something that is quite potentially dynamic in its form. Throw into that the fact that in this particular drawing, I'm looking down the row of vines, and you have a dramatic sense of perspective going off into a sort of near infinity. All this just grabs the attention of the viewer, I think you'll recognise it wasn't by accident that it was in the middle of the room over the fireplace.
Mm.
It just demands that you look at it. Whether or not you like it is another thing, but you can't not look at it.
True.
So that was the vines. And I'm happy to say it's been sold.
Oh, has it really?
Yeah.
Congratulations. Oh, that's wonderful to have a sale on the opening.
Oh, we had several.
Several.
Yeah.
Terrific. Yeah. Well, fortunately, they all have to stay here. The people who have bought them can't take them away until the end of the exhibition. So I would urge people to come along and have a look at this amazing exhibition. Downstairs, there is Laura Wright, and I'll be talking to her later on with her exhibition. And also, there's the children's exhibition downstairs as well. This is the unframed exhibition of children. But thank you, Don, very much for chatting with us today. People, if you don't know, the gallery is situated at Gawler Railway Station. It's the old station master's house.
And don't believe Google.
Don't believe Google.
They have it 200 yards further down the road.
Oh, do they really? Well, even Google can make a mistake now and again.
Marilyn, I'd like to thank you very much for the interview.
Oh, you're welcome.
For the opportunity. And I wish all the viewers a lovely day and hope that perhaps some of them will make it to the gallery.
I hope they do. Do yourself
viewers,
a favour.
Did I say? Where did I come from? I said viewers.
You said viewers.
The listeners.
Listeners, yes. No worries. We've got no cameras here today. Okay, thanks a lot.